I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
Tracy, it's been a little while since we've had a history mystery.
It has.
And I love them so much. I feel like I always have to restrain myself from doing a bunch of them.
And history mystery is just fun to say.
Indeed. Who doesn't like a little rhyme? So we're going to talk about one today. And this one is an artifact that's been studied for more than 100 years. Although some have claimed to figure it out, there's really no consensus about it. So we're going to be talking about Minoan Crete and the Phaistos Disc, which was unearthed in 1908. And this is an artifact which features symbols that, like the Voynich manuscript, have really puzzled researchers for decades. But like I said, no one has been able to agree on what it is, although there's some people pretty vehement, especially in recent times, that they have got this thing figured out.
So Crete, of course, sits in the eastern Mediterranean Sea. The island is about 200 kilometers or 124 miles across, east to west. It ranges from 12 to 58 kilometers or 7.5 to 36 miles, north to south.
Minoans, often credited as the first European civilization, had a decentralized sort of culture, which did a pretty brisk export business. So timber, food, olive oil, wool, and dye were among the many goods that Crete sold or traded, and their most popular imports were precious metals, precious stones, and ivory.
Minoan culture had contact with Egypt, Mesopotamia, and Phoenicia, and they were constantly influenced a lot by all of those cultures. If you've listened to our episode on the Phoenician alphabet, you may recall that part of the development of that alphabet came to the need of creating this unified system of communication for trading with all these various Mediterranean cultures.
And we know that Crete was inhabited as early as the 7th millennium BCE, although it wasn't until after the 5th millennium BCE that we really start to see pottery in the timeline. And that sort of marks the beginning of the Minoan civilization.
There are a couple of different ways that the Minoan civilization is divided into periods. One method is based on this pottery and marks changes in the style of pottery. This divides it as the early period, dating from 3000 to 2100 BCE. The middle period from 2100 to 1500 BCE, and the late period dating from 1500 to 1100 BCE.
And there's an alternative way of looking at the timeline of Minoan civilization and breaking it up. And that's based sort of on architecture as it's linked to the culture. And this separates it into four segments. So this breaks Minoan Crete into a pre-palatial period from 2600 to 1900 BCE, a proto-palatial period from 1900 to 1700 BCE, a neo-palatial period from 1700 to 1400 BCE, and a post-palatial period from 1400 to 1150 BCE.
The Phaistos disc was discovered in 1908. It was found on Crete in what's called the Old Palace of Minoan Phaistos. The disc, made of fired clay, has been dated to 1850 to 1550 BCE, with an estimate of about 1700 BCE as the more exact date. This means it predates the time that the Phoenicians would have been developing their alphabet. It also means it falls into the middle Minoan period if you're looking at the pottery-based breakdown of the timeline, and it sort of straddles the proto-palatial and neo-palatial periods on the alternate timeline.
Circa 2000 BCE, in the crossover period between the pre-palatial and proto-palatial periods, the political system shifted and Minoan Crete became more centralized around a king. Remember, we had said earlier it was decentralized prior to this. And this is also when these palaces became part of the landscape of Crete. They served as sort of both centers of government and community.
While there was a great deal of upheaval around this shift from a decentralized culture to one that was focused on a central figure, things seemed to settle into a peaceful period not long afterward.
Some event, and we don't know exactly what it was, if it was a natural disaster along the lines of an earthquake or if Minoan Crete was invaded, but some event destroyed these palaces that had become administrative centers. And this destruction and the rebuilding of the lost palaces mark the transition to the neo-palatial period. And this neo-palatial period is also considered the time when Minoan culture was at its apex.
Next, we will talk about this disc in more detail, but first let's have a break to talk about one of the awesome sponsors who make this show possible.
So, most people will do whatever it takes to make sure that their small business runs efficiently, and that means sometimes that involves constant trips to the post office, but that can actually get in the way of efficiency. So with Stamps.com, you will be able to spend less time at the post office and more time actually growing your business. Stamps.com makes mailing and shipping super easy. You just use your own computer and your printer to purchase and print official U.S. postage, and that's going to work for any letter and any package that you need to send. Stamps.com basically does all of the things for you. So you have a digital scale that's going to calculate the exact postage that you need, and it'll actually help you decide on the best class of mail you need to choose based on your needs. So join more than 500,000 small businesses that use Stamps.com and never worry about going to the post office again. Right now, you can use our promo code, which is STUFF, for a special offer, and that gets you a no-risk trial plus a $110 bonus offer. That includes a digital scale and up to $55 worth of free postage. So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. But before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in STUFF. That's Stamps.com and enter STUFF. So now to talk about the actual disc, now that we've kind of set up where it would have fallen in the timeline in terms of Minoan Crete culture. The disc itself is pretty small. The diameter ranges from 15.8 to 16.5 centimeters, which is 6.2 to 6.5 inches, depending on where that diameter measurement is taken. This is one of those things, I have seen pictures of it at various points through the years, and in my head it was always so much bigger than that, that then when I was working on research for this, I was like, it's a little.
Yeah, it's like when we did the episode on the Antikythera device, which I similarly thought was quite large, until you were like, no, it's like a little shoebox.
Yes, little. And the thickness of this disc ranges from 1.6 to 2.1 centimeters, so that's about 0.6 to 0.8 inches in thickness.
There's a spiral pattern of more than 240 images on the disc, featuring 45 different symbols. In the very center of side A is what looks like a simple flower, and then the symbols spiral out from there in groups that range from 2 to 7 in number. There are vertical lines that separate these groups. Side B has a symbol that's made of wavy lines and sort of a rounded triangular shape at the center.
Yeah, and as Tracy just said, which was in my notes, it kind of... There's an image in the center and then it sort of spirals out from there. But there are actually two different theories about how this spiraling really works, in which direction it's supposed to go. So one approach points out that the symbols are oriented to the right. So faces that are in profile, there's one that's often called the punk, and it looks like a dude with a mohawk. And it looks to the right. And figures that appear to be walking or in motion also look like they're walking to the right. And this has led some scholars to the conclusion that the disc should be read spiraling outward from left to right. This is also supported by a sort of abrupt end point in the spiral, where at the very end, where the last loop kind of meets up with the previous one, there's a hard vertical line that's punctuated with several dots. It looks like a very final sort of symbol to some people.
The opposite reading direction, which goes from right to left and spirals inward, is supported by the fact that some symbols occasionally overlap the symbols on their right. So this indicates that the stamping was done from right to left.
Yeah, so just like you wouldn't write a word with the last letter first and then go backwards. Most people, maybe some people learn to write backwards. But their idea is that they wouldn't be overlapping in that way, because normally you would write it the way it would be beginning to end. So that suggests that it goes that way. And the symbols, we've mentioned that they were stamped. They appear to have been stamped in the clay before firing. And what's sort of interesting is that these stamps don't appear to repeat even when they're very similar to one another. Like, it's the same punk that reappears, but it doesn't look quite the same. So there may have been more than one stamp for that. So, symbols that are almost identical don't look like they were made with the same stamp. And there are a few positions in the clay that look like it was stamped and then maybe reworked, kind of smoothed out, almost to erase the stamp, and then restamped prior to firing.
Unlike the symbols, the spiral line from the center out and the lines that break up the segments of the symbols look like they were carved into the disc by hand rather than stamped. Dashes and dots also appear in some of the symbol groupings. These elements, particularly the dashes, may have some kind of significance, or they may have been accidentally imprinted as the disc was being made.
Yeah, they're not consistent in where they appear. Like, in some cases, they appear near the beginning of each segment, but they don't do that to all the segments, so we're not sure. And there has never, as we've said before, been a consensus among researchers and scholars as to what these symbols represent. Some are obvious pictograms. They look like humans, like I talked about the punk. They look like fish or flowers, while others of them are more abstract, kind of like when Tracy mentioned earlier that the center point on side B is like wavy lines in this triangle that's got kind of rounded edges. Because of this mix, it's clearly not specifically just a pictograph item, but there are too many different symbols for it to likely be an alphabet. So it's possible that the symbols represent syllables. That's a very popular approach to analysis, and that each segment of symbols creates a single word.
But the syllabary theory has problems as well. For one thing, if the symbols on the Phaistos disc formed a syllabary language, there would be a more even distribution of the symbols. There are also no one-syllable words and very few two-syllable words present if the disc is interpreted this way, which would be pretty unusual for a language.
Yeah, it's one of those things where as I was researching and saw that, I'm like, is that? And then I'm looking at my own typing and I'm like, half of these words have only one or two syllables.
Well, I think there are languages that have, on average, longer words, but still generally have shorter words also. I don't know.
Yeah, for most languages, shorter words make up sort of the bulk of the language.
Yeah, then you get compound words that are like mixes of the shorter words.
Right. So it is also possible that this disc is a mix of communication forms. It could be a combination of pictogram and syllabary, and we're going to talk a little bit more about why that's a possibility in just a moment.
Many theories have emerged into what this disc actually is, although there's no real evidence for any of them. It's been suggested that it's a letter, a fertility ritual, some form of musical notation, a list of royalty, a religious hymn, a spell, a geometry theorem. It goes on and on and on and on and on. But without similar discs to reference against, these are all really just stabs in the dark.
Yeah, but the one thing that people mostly do agree on, and this was not always the case, is that it is pretty commonly believed and accepted that the disc did in fact originate on Crete and wasn't created somewhere else and then brought there.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. Say goodbye to complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping, and say hello to an advantage with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Every business faces challenges, but shipping shouldn't be one of them. So keep things simple with clear, upfront pricing. And no unexpected surcharges for Saturday deliveries, residential deliveries, or fuel. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there, helping you counter the rising costs of doing business with a budget-friendly alternative. And keep things reliable with on-time ground shipping, ensuring your shipments get to where they need to go while maintaining your hard-earned reputation. USPS Ground Advantage is your ticket to easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. It's the complete delivery service your business needs to rise above the competition. There's never been a better time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
So, many attempts have been made to decrypt this disk through the years. In 1975, Jean Facunau of Luxembourg believed that the language was a pre-Greek syllabic form of writing employed by a proto-Ionian culture. His translation of the disk tells the story of the reign and eventual passing of a king. Most Phaistos disk scholars rejected this interpretation, however. There have been other interpretations put forth through the years, but all of them have had a similar fate in the classics community.
Yeah, they've all really been dismissed pretty readily. But there is a very recent interpretation theory that is now being discussed, and this was introduced just last year. So in May of 2014, Minoan language and classic scholar Gareth Owens gave a TEDx talk about his work with the Phaistos disk.
He and other researchers worked together with their knowledge of the writing forms Minoan Linear A, Minoan Linear B, and Cretan pictographic hieroglyphic language over the course of 6 years to assign syllables to the pictograms on the disk.
Cretan pictographic script was in use circa 1950 to 1700 BCE. And the symbols used in this writing form are pretty clearly drawn from real objects. So there's a lot of animals and humans and plant life representation. So for context on these writing forms that we just mentioned, Cretan pictographic script was in use circa 1750 to 1700 BCE. And the symbols used in this writing form are pretty clearly drawn from real objects, such as animals and humans and plant life.
Linear A is believed to have been used on Crete from about 1850 to 1400 BCE. It's a syllabic language, and while we know that some of the phonetics represented by most of the symbols, we don't really know the language of Linear A. Linear A has been found on artifacts in Crete as well as the Aegean Islands.
And you probably noticed an overlap, as we were just talking about those two, in the times of use when Cretan pictograph and Linear A were both being used. And we don't know why both the more primitive and the more advanced writing forms were being used concurrently for so long. But that could somehow explain the idea that the writing on the disc is a combination of different forms as a sort of linguistic evolution snapshot.
Linear B is an adaptation of Linear A. It's believed that this was a version of the writing form, and that it contains more than 90 signs. This script was used for financial records and was used in palaces of many of continental Greece's cities. Linear B is considered incredibly important linguistically because vestiges of this dialect remain in evidence from Homer's writings.
Yeah, it really did have a long-lasting influence. And it's common when interpreting something like the Phaistos disc for classicists and researchers to work backward from Linear B to Linear A to Cretan pictogram writing when they're working to interpret these texts. And using this so-called epigraphic continuity, which is one of the things that Owens calls it, he's developed his interpretation of the Phaistos disc. And Owen's reading of the disc also suggests reading it inward, starting at the outer edge of the spiral rather than from the center out.
Owens believes that he and his team have deciphered enough of the signs on the disc to determine that it is some sort of prayer to a Minoan goddess. In a particularly interesting finale to his talk, he shares a recording of a woman reading the Phaistos disc as his team has decrypted it.
And you can also find this recorded audio interpretation on a website that Owens and his colleagues have put together, and we'll link to it in the show notes. But it is pretty interesting to hear someone speaking this language, whatever it is, this communication.
Owen's conviction in his findings is quite apparent. In fact, he's willing to bet other researchers that his interpretation is correct. And his bet is only €1 because he's really hoping a lot of people will challenge him and then he'll wind up with a lot of euros.
Yeah, for each different bet he'll collect.
He'll collect €1.
And that, of course, doesn't mean, I mean, we talked earlier about how many other people have put forth theories and they all got shot down. So it does not mean that even though Owens is very, very confident in their findings, that the entire classics world agrees with his transliteration. So in a response paper that was written by John G. Young, who is a professor of classics at the University of Kansas, he kind of goes through point by point what he feels like is right in their work and what he feels like kind of diverged and wasn't maybe so solid. And he summarizes his points at the end of the paper by writing, quote, "I think Owen starts off well, and in the company of many of us who have tried to place secure phonetic values on Phaistos disc signs by working backward from Linear B. But by the time we get to Cretan pictogram signs, the identifications have become insecure, and the step to identifying Phaistos disc signs now seems a leap. Owens has bridged some of that leap, but I cannot follow him in identifying 90% of the Phaistos disc signs, let alone seeing in his transcription true parallels to Linear A words."
Thomas G. Palema, Robert M. Armstrong Centennial Professor and Director of the Program in Aegean Scripts and Prehistory at the University of Texas at Austin, wrote of the Owens interpretation, "The data are insufficient for proof or disproof. Every proposed decipherment, Gareth Owens is included, fails the standard of probability."
Yeah, I was actually surprised watching some of these documentaries and doing research that probability comes up a lot. Like, linguistic probability wasn't something I had thought a lot about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like that same thing where we were saying earlier, like, the likelihood of a language having no single syllables, not so probable.
Right.
It comes up in terms of statistical analysis of language a lot more than I ever would have thought about. But Another critic, Brent Davis, who is the adjunct professor at the Center for Classics and Archaeology at the University of Melbourne, was asked his opinion, and he said, quote, "In the end, Owens's readings are based on a stack of unverifiable assumptions. His conclusions are unproven and unprovable. It's not surprising, then, that so many scholars of Aegean Bronze Age scripts aren't accepting them."
Despite criticisms, Owens is steadfast and upbeat. In an email interview with Bible History Daily, he wrote, "It is perhaps easier to criticize than to offer something new. After 25 years on Crete and having spent a decade doing a PhD in linguistics on the structure of the Minoan language, and after 6 years on the disc, I personally will keep trying to improve our work, and I will happily hear better theories with great pleasure."
Yeah, he really is a very upbeat gent. His talk is really good. If you're like me, when you first start his TED Talk, he starts in another language and you think, oh no, this isn't for me. That's only the very beginning. So stick with it. And then if you are a native English speaker, you'll be right on board. He switches to English for the rest of it. But he gives the talk in Greece. So he starts out speaking, I believe, Greek. But before we talk a little bit about a whole other controversy that surrounds this disc, let's pause for another word from one of our fabulous sponsors who keeps us going.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. Say goodbye to complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping, and say hello to an advantage with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Every business faces challenges, but shipping shouldn't be one of them. So keep things simple with clear, upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges for Saturday deliveries, residential deliveries, or fuel. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there, helping you counter the rising costs of doing business with a budget-friendly alternative. And keep things reliable with on-time ground shipping, ensuring your shipments get to where they need to go while maintaining your hard-earned reputation. USPS Ground Advantage is your ticket to easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. It's the complete delivery service your business needs to rise above the competition. There's never been a better time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated.
AT&T Fiber, live like a Gaginian. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Today, our sponsor is Squarespace, and Squarespace is an awesome way, especially if you don't have a lot of experience, for you to make your own website. It is a very easy-to-use, drag-and-drop, intuitive interface. On top of it being extremely easy to use, they also have 24/7 customer support. That includes email support and live chat. They are there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So you can make a really beautiful website that's very easy to create and also has lots and lots of support there if you get into it and discover it's not quite as easy for you personally as you thought that it might be.
One of my favorite things about it is how easily it scales your website so that it's going to look great on a computer, on a phone, on a tablet. Anywhere someone can look at your website, they're going to see the best possible experience.
I love that too. So you can actually try this product risk-free by going to www.squarespace.com/history. That gives you a 14-day free trial with no credit card necessary. And I will say that again, no credit card necessary for your 14-day free trial. If you like it, once you get into it, it costs as little as $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. If you use the offer code HISTORY, you get 10% off of your first purchase. So one more time, that is squarespace.com/history. So there's the question of whether this whole thing is really a hoax. The man who discovered the Phaistos disc was Luigi Pernier, and he was an Italian archaeologist. He found the disc in an underground temple depository. He also believed it to be of religious significance. Along with the Phaistos disc, the Italian archaeology team that he was part of found a clay tablet with Linear A inscriptions, as well as various pieces of pottery.
And recall that this was in the early 1900s when he made that discovery. Now, as is the case with other ancient artifacts that haven't been truly understood, I'll once again reference the Voynich manuscript, which has come up as some people think it's a hoax because otherwise somebody would have decrypted it by now. Controversy, again, eventually enters the picture with the Phaistos disc as well. In 2008, Jerome Eisenberg, who is the director and owner of the Royal Athena Galleries in New York and is considered an expert on ancient art, proclaimed that the Phaistos disc was, in fact, a fraud.
Eisenberg believed that Pernier, out of jealousy that he held for other archaeologists of his time and their accomplishments, fabricated an accomplishment of his own. He's not the first person to put forth the idea that the disc is baloney, but he seems to be the most passionate about it when it comes to really chasing down the truth.
And to support his accusation, Eisenberg pointed out that the edges of the Phaistos disc are far more cleanly cut than other examples of tablets from Minoan Crete. And he also cites the lack of any credible translation as evidence that it really is likely fake.
Additionally, no other artifact found on Crete has the same type of stamping or writing as the Phaistos disc. One piece, the Archilochori axe, found in 1934, does have some similar markings. But Eisenberg also believes this might too be a fraud.
So our listeners are smart, and as they have listened to us just now talking about Eisenberg's claims, they probably had a great idea. The Phaistos disc is carefully kept in the Heraklion Archaeology Museum in Crete. So why doesn't someone just test this to see if it's the real deal or just a long-pondered fraud?
Yeah, I was like, we have isotope testing. What's going on? The museum is not having any of that. It will not allow the disc to be tested. Eisenberg has requested the testing many times over the years, offering to pay all the expenses that it would incur, but no dice. They also have the axe that we mentioned a moment ago, and they're not letting him or anyone test that either.
Eisenberg asserts that the required tests are not going to harm the disc. At most, one or two small holes would need to be drilled in the edge of the artifact to take samples. So tiny that he says these can easily be repaired so that the naked eye would detect no anomaly.
Requests to even examine the disc have been denied on the grounds that it's an important piece of Greek history and is unmovable. Eisenberg believes that the museum is afraid that the disc would be revealed as fake and that they would lose tourism because of it.
Yeah, so it remains a mystery unless they cave and acquiesce and let someone test it.
I don't know. People love hoaxes, so it might actually work
right?
out in their benefit if it were fake.
At that point, it's still a 100-year-old, really carefully crafted hoax, so it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
This is kind of a footnote. It's such a weird thing, and I found just one reference to it, but I wanted to mention it. There was allegedly a smaller copy of the disc that was found in Russia in 1992 that raised some other hoax questions. But that version has vanished without a trace. Several years after people started raising their eyebrows about it, it just kind of went underground. It has never been seen or heard of again. So we don't have that for comparison.
Yeah.
We don't have...
This whole thing just makes me wonder if hundreds and hundreds or even thousands of years from now, archaeologists are going to find some kind of junky thing somebody bought at Urban Outfitters that has like fake Hopi designs on it or something.
Yeah.
And then spend hundreds of years trying to decode it when really it is cheap stuff that appropriated another culture and then was sold in a retail establishment.
Yeah, I wonder similar things as well. I mean, I had that moment of, what if it's just some kid's doodle that his parents fired
yeah.
to keep?
What?
We don't know.
What if this was a prop that was used in a play? I don't know.
Right. Yeah, we have no... There's just enough similarities, you know, and valid interpretive elements to it, or valid to be interpreted elements to it, that... It seems like it could be grounded there, but people have also pointed out that it's just far enough off that it supports the hoax theory and that it's just good enough to represent pretty closely what we knew about Minoan Crete mm-hmm. in the early 1900s. So we don't know. And hopefully we'll learn more at some point. I always like some fresh learning.
Before I think of some more wild conjecture, do you have some listener mail for us?
I do. I have a couple of different pieces. It's a listener mail extravaganza over here. First, I have a little correction because sometimes I'm a doofus. When we had read in a previous episode a time capsule email during our listener mail segment, we were talking about Andy Warhol and those time capsules, and I incorrectly attributed Warhol's death to Valerie Solanas because... My brain cannot be trusted. She did shoot him, but he died much later.
Because she shot him.
And all I could hear was like Lou Reed singing about it in my head. And my brain misfired. I apologize. I feel very, very embarrassed. Cause I really do love Warhol and did a lot of papers on him when I was younger. But it doesn't always stick with you. It's like a foreign language sometimes. If you're not practicing it, it just gets rusty. And then I have several short listener mails all about our recent episode on peanut butter. Because, like I said, I love it and talk about it a lot. So the first one is from our listener, Perry, who wanted to recommend a dish for peanut butter lovers. He says, "Hi, ladies. I'm sitting here at work listening to today's podcast on peanut butter, and I thought I'd take the time to recommend the strangest and most delicious peanut butter dish I have ever had the pleasure of eating. A few years ago, my younger sister spent a semester abroad in Ghana, and when she returned home, she couldn't wait to take me to the nearest authentic Ghanaian food restaurant we could find. She was so excited for me to try one dish in particular because of my love for its star ingredient, which is peanut butter. Apparently, peanut butter is revered in Ghana. Who knew? I highly recommend booking it to the nearest place you can find to try a plate of peanut butter soup and fufu, which is a dish served with sticky rice that you roll into balls and dip with your hands into the chicken and peanut butter soup. Although it may sound like a strange combination for peanut butter lovers like ourselves, it is just about the tastiest dish ever. Perry, I am glad to report that I have had fufu, and I agree, it's so delicious. I think I had it the first time when I was in Disney World. There are a couple of really yummy African restaurants at Animal Kingdom Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, one of the chefs came out and we were talking because that's my favorite ride is food. And we were talking about the fufu and he brought me some sticky rice and we played and ate together, which was delicious. And it has now become one of my big favorites. The next one is from our listener, Penny, and she is also writing about it. She does photo editing at a fashion company, which sounds so cool to me. Penny, send us pictures. She says, "When I was a young girl, we lived with my grandmother in Ohio during every summer and winter vacation. She had a large old house with a large basement that I was always too frightened to go down into. One evening, I chased a firefly down into the basement and ended up staring at shelves upon shelves of canned goods and boxes of clothes and random things. I remembered seeing large cans of peanut butter sitting right on the shelf at eye level that were bigger than my head. I was too scared to venture forth, and I ran back upstairs. I remember from that day forth, I thought that every time I asked for a peanut butter sandwich, that the peanut butter came from one of those cans. Now that I'm older and my grandmother has passed, I visited her home, but it's since been cleared out. I asked my uncle about all that stuff I saw, and he said that during the Great Depression, my grandmother was expected to take care of her younger siblings as she was the eldest, and the family basically survived on peanut butter. The Great Depression did something to people, including turning my grandmother into a hoarder of food and clothing from Goodwill. She was convinced the next depression and economic collapse was right around the corner, and she stocked up on everything, determined to never go hungry by always having peanut butter nearby. And even now, I always have at least 3 peanut butter jars in my house, just in case. I can't fault the idea of keeping peanut butter on hand for a variety of reasons, except that I can't because I eat it all much too quickly. Like when the apocalypse comes and Brian's like, where's all that food we bought? I'll be like, in my tummy. It's gone. And the last one is from our listener, Liam, and it made me laugh so hard. It came late-ish last night while I was doing some work, and I was cackling so much that it frightened my cats. He says, recently, when listening to the fascinating history of peanut butter, my ears pricked up when I heard you mention Sanitas Food Company because of a funny thing I've noticed here in Australia. And I left out the part earlier where Liam is an American from Boston, and he's currently living in Sydney. He said, peanut butter is one of many surprising things that Aussies designate as, quote, very American. I, of course, love the stuff, and I was cracked up when I found a jar of peanut butter at my local grocery store with a picture pun of a peanut doing crunches to indicate that it was crunchy peanut butter. He sent us a picture. It is so funny. I literally could not stop laughing. He says, it doesn't take much to make me laugh, but when I posted the photo on Facebook, my sister pointed out the funny name of the company that made the peanut butter, which is Sanitarium. And then he made the connection to John Harvey Kellogg and the Battle Creek Sanitarium. And so I pointed him to that episode, but I just wanted to share the idea that crunchy peanut butter can be represented by a peanut exercising his abs. That's like the best thing ever.
I also want you expressed your horror that I do not care for crunchy peanut butter.
Yeah.
However, on the 4th of July, we had an entire beach day, which was great. And we had sandwiches for lunch with sandwich provisions that friends had brought. And they had like a crunchy peanut butter. And it was delicious. I had it within a peanut butter and banana sandwich. So I think perhaps either my tastes have changed, which is true. There's other stuff that was I hated when I was a child that I like now. Or I was just eating the wrong crunchy peanut butter.
Well, I was going to say I developed a theory after we were doing the QA listen on that episode. Mm-hmm. That because you had mentioned the big vat peanut butter that had to be stirred, mm-hmm. sometimes because of the stirring and the chunky peanuts in it, they can break up a little bit and you get almost a grainy texture. Mm-hmm. And that might be the problem that you had had previously. Yeah. Like it gets a little weird in your mouth and some of the natural ones that you have to stir when there's crunchy bits.
Those are so much better now than they were in 1977.
They really are. I remember we had a friend who had, we used to say she had hippie parents. It's really not appropriate to say, but in the 70s, that's right. What my parents said about her parents. And they had that kind of peanut butter. And I always remember being like,
yeah,
this is difficult to consume. And it tore my bread.
There are a lot of food options that my, like the whole grain pasta options that exist now are also so much better than in the late 70s. Anyway, that's off topic.
Food science. If you would like to write to us about crazy legumes doing exercises on canisters of food or any other thing, you can do that at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. You can also connect with us at facebook.com/MissedInHistory, on Twitter @MissedInHistory, at missedinhistory.tumblr.com, on pinterest.com/missedinhistory, and at missedinhistory.spreadshirt.com if you would like to purchase Missed in History shirts and phone cases and tote bags and other wackadoodle items. If you would like to learn a little bit more about ancient Greece, you can go to our parent site, How Stuff Works, and you can type in Greece in the search bar and you will get all kinds of information about Greece through the ages. If you would like to come and visit us at missedinhistory.com, you can do that and find all of our back episodes and show notes for all of the episodes since Tracy and I have been hosts, as well as the occasional other delightful goodie or blog post. So we encourage you to do that. Come see us on the web at howstuffworks.com and missedinhistory.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments, for 90 days and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.